great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about home improvement today and focusing on a bit on outdoor living areas with our two guests. Chad Spate back with us. He is the owner of Chad's Design Build. Chad, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
Good to have you here. Tim Quigley with us as well. Tim is the owner of Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail. And Tim, good to have you back.
Thank you. Pleasure to be back on here again.
So as you listen to these two pros talk, I hope you'll join in. You have a question about deck materials. What would you like to know about maybe constructing and staining a deck? Are you thinking about adding a fire pit to your yard? Those are some of the things we can talk about, and I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Tim, let's start with you. What are some of the most common outdoor projects you're talking to your customers about these days?
Well, the most common, of course, is your old-fashioned deck. I kind of use that kind of humorously because, you know, you still have the deck, which is the main feature. But now people are adding a lot of accessories to their deck. You know, outdoor furniture. You know, if you look at some of the shelter magazines, the furniture that you see on in these backyards is as fancy and as comfortable as what's inside in the house. People are spending more time in their backyard. It seems to be trending that way. And so, yeah, they're definitely investing more money in it.
And Chad, what trends are you currently seeing these days in outdoor renovation?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I'll just say a lot of people are expanding their homes. We're doing a lot of home offices. We're doing first floor accessible bedroom suites for aging in place. You know, the normal kitchen and bathroom renovations, but a lot of screen porches added onto homes, which is consistent with this trend towards outdoor living. People love having just an old-fashioned screen porch, but beautifully detailed, often exposed rafters, you know, lots of nice touches to kind of bring the North Woods down to Dane County.
So. And for either of you, what would you consider the best curb appeal projects to be when it comes to outdoor living spaces, where, you know, if you're thinking about investing your money, where, you know, what should we invest in, Tim?
I would say if you're going to invest money in a deck, invest it where you don't have to invest time after the deck is built, like in good quality composite materials, where the maintenance is a minimum and where staining is not required. Because that seems to be a frustration with a lot of people that's calling, asking about having a deck built. They are just tired of staining, painting the old deck, sanding and staining it. And as the wood gets older, they have to do that every year. And it takes all the enjoyment out of
the deck. And I think it's a selling point, too. If you are going to sell your home, you can say, well, this deck is, you're not going to have to stain this. You know, it's going to be there, and you're not going to have to do a lot with it. I think would have a lot of appeal to a purchaser.
Yeah, it sure would. And one of the things we talked about the last time I was on, Larry, was the steel framing.
Yeah.
The understructure of the deck. Once that's built, it's done. If you decide 20 years down the road that you don't like the surface of the deck, the frame is still there and you can just resurface it.
Yeah. Chad, anything to add on that?
Those are good ideas. And I mean, so I will say that for curb appeal, we are doing an unusual number of front entryway improvements. And of course, decks are typically on the back of the house, but a lot of front porches are being added to homes. And in the last 10 years in the city of Madison, there have been some changes to the zoning ordinance to allow homeowners to add an open front porch. It can never be enclosed, but they're allowed to expand an additional 7 feet towards the front lot line with a front porch. And it's all done, you know, with the hopes of reinvigorating that kind of community, you know, hanging out on the front porch and interacting with your neighbors as they walk past. And so, you know, that, of course, addresses both curb appeal and improving the property's value. So,
yeah, I was thinking about my own front porch where, I mean, in the summertime, it's a neighborhood stopping point. I even have a refrigerator located nearby, just inside the front door.
Nice.
With soft drinks and beer and so forth. And there are impromptu little get-togethers very often on my front porch. So I think it's cool. And I always find it kind of sad when I see where people have closed in their front porches and made other living areas out of it. But that's a conversation perhaps for another time. Pat in Madison has a question for you too. Let's go there. Hi, Pat.
Question because of Chad's comments. But this is about footings. I've put in a couple of decks in the past. Now, what I'd like to do is put up an arbor that has two, 4x4 anchor posts. And I'm wondering how deep those have to go, and can they be in preforms that don't have to go down, 4 feet or whatever? Second question is about putting on a very small addition, have you heard of these diamond, I think they're called diamond piers, instead of putting down an entire, digging out a putting in a big frost wall and all of that, can these diamond piers work for supporting a small addition of 12x7?
Hmm. Well,
okay.
Yeah, Chad, I'll start with you and then go to Tim.
Sure. Well, as far as a small addition goes, I mean, there are some options for footings, and it is true that the diamond pier or similar engineered piers can be installed. Depending on the grade of the lot and how far the structure, the wood structure, is from the ground, that in part influences whether or not we would recommend considering that sort of a foundation. There are a number of things that you have to do for a heated addition. When you don't have a foundation and a subsequent either crawl space or full basement underneath it, there are a number of things that have to be done to insulate the floor when you have a pier construction. So that's just one of many details that you would work out with your builder, but it is a possibility. To address the first question about an arbor or some other landscape structure, whenever you build something out in the yard that is not attached to your primary residence, typically that does not require full of frost footings. So, for example, a detached garage is often built on a cement slab that simply floats on the ground. And the same is true of sheds or gazebos. Certainly an arbor can essentially be built and attached to the ground in a manner consistent with your budget and how long you want that to stand upright and plumb. The advantage to putting a full foundation of some sort under any of these secondary structures is that they're going to potentially more than likely move around a lot less than they would if they were on a more shallow foundation. But depending on their location in the yard and the condition of the soil, there are many structures that are not on full frost footings that will last for many decades out in the yard. So,
there you go.
Again, I would rely on the expertise of your builder to help guide you with some options on that.
Yeah. Pat, thank you for calling. Gianni in Montello will give you a chance. Hi, Gianni.
Yes, Larry. Thank you for your show. My question concerns cedar siding. About 9 years ago, someone stayed in my house, and I was been very impressed by how well the stain has held up. I think it was a latex acrylic type stain, but I think probably this summer I'm going to have to redo it. So two questions. What is the best type of stain to put on over this stain? And do I have to power wash it before I apply the new stain? Or can I just hose it down a week before? Can you give me some advice on that?
Sure, I'd be happy to give you a little bit of advice. So first off, the fact that the stain is holding up well is great news, because many times when a stain is failing, there are two reasons that it can fail. One is that the preparation on the siding itself was not done adequately for a good bond. But a lot of times what we find is that older homes, the siding was not back primed or treated in any way on the backside. And in many structures, a lot of moisture will drive out of the structure into the siding or whatever material is on the house. And that moisture has to be able to escape. And so the product that you put on there hopefully will keep water out, but allow moisture to pass through it. And so that is something to discuss with a trusted supplier. You know, if you're going to be doing it yourself, I would recommend going to a good paint and stain supplier and talk to someone with some expertise on their particular products. But as far as it's, and I don't get in typically to recommending a particular product, but what it has to be able to do is, you have to prepare the surface well, and then it has to allow the moisture to escape from the wood. There's some excellent products on the market these days. Certainly the products have become even better over the last 10 or 20 years. I'm a big fan of places like Sherwin-Williams or Hallman Lindsay, that just do paint and stain. And many times I find the folks that work in those stores have a tremendous amount of product knowledge.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Tim, I got a couple of questions sort of aimed at you. A listener emailed to ask if she should hire a contractor or deck expert to move her deck stairs. She needs to move the stairs, apparently wants to anyway. And wonders how much it would cost to take off the old stairs and put in some new stairs.
Yeah, definitely hire a contractor to move the stairs, because in the building codes, the building inspectors are they're sticklers on stairs, because a stairway is where most accidents happen as far as people falling and that. As far as the cost, that would depend on a lot of things: how many steps, how the stairs is attached to the deck, or how it would need to be attached to the deck. If the deck is up to code where the stairs is attached, and the footings. you know, I know that's not a straight answer on costs, but if you want to email me, I'd be more than happy to give her a cost. But we're booked out till about the end of July anyway, so.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, and I don't have any more information in front of me than what was just included in that email, so that wouldn't be a bad thing for that listener to do. Linda emailed, she's moved into a home that has a deck with some type of composite decking material. She doesn't know what it is. They've been unable to remove mildew staining and wonder if it's possible to paint it with a good product. Here you've got this composite decking, but it's mildewed.
Okay, I'm going to take a guess and say that this is the old composite that first came out without the plastic covering on it. So it's a sawdust and plastic milk bottles, and the sawdust will absorb moisture, which will allow the mildew to grow. They were the problems when the composites first came out, and then they resolved that by covering the entire board with a plastic coating to keep the moisture out. I don't know of a stain or a paint to cover that, and I don't think there is one on the market anywhere. Mm. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but if it is the old composite without the plastic covering on it, she probably doesn't have much luck.
Mm. Well, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build, one of our guests, the other you just heard, Tim Quigley, owner of Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. And we'll get to Brian in Eau Claire and Steve in Stoughton in just a minute. But I got to remind you that Courtney Everett was our producer today, and Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at home improvement today and zeroing in a bit on decks and outdoor renovations with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Tim Quigley, owner of Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail. Brian in Eau Claire, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so you had mentioned to ask questions about staining the deck, so here you go.
Okay.
We just had a deck put in last June, and it's a green pressure-treated wood, and there's a couple questions I have. How long should you wait before you stain it? Because I've been told, you know, different things. And I'm thinking stain versus paint, because the painted deck we had before just peeled off after a few years. But what do you do to treat it prep it before you have to stain it?
Okay. Let's see. Tim, do you want to take that?
Sure, yeah. There's two different types of treated wood. And there's the kiln dried after the treatment process, where the treated lumber, after it's treated, is put into a kiln, and that moisture is taken back out of the lumber again. That you can stain right away after installation. If it is not a kiln dried after treatment lumber, which the majority of it would be not, it's good to wait at least a year for the moisture to come back out of it. Rather than, a lot of people like to power wash it to prep it. The only thing with doing that, when you power wash it, you're forcing water into the deck boards, and even though it will be dry on the surface, there's still water inside in the deck board, and people will come along and stain that. And then as the moisture is working its way out, it's pushing the stain away from the wood. So I always recommend a walk-behind sander, floor sander, and sand it down. The wood also, when it comes from the factory, does have a light wax filament on it, just basically to protect it for during freight and when you're walking on the deck boards installing them. So you need to take that off with the floor sander, and then finish it up with a palm sander and some a block with some hand sandpaper. I would recommend an oil-based stain rather than a water-based, because the oil will soak into the wood better And but it's always good, as Chad mentioned earlier on, talk to someone like Sherwin-Williams or any of them professional painters, painting outfits, suppliers, and they'll give you some really good information as well, especially if you want to do it yourself.
Yeah, that was good, good points. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the call. Steve in Stoughton has a deck question too, I believe. Hi, Steve.
Hi, and thanks for the show. I want to just say my own anecdote about using Sherwin-Williams was very positive, and I painted my daughter's porch with a kind of a, like a Sherwin-Williams deck paint with epoxy. It went on really well, and it's very durable, so two thumbs up on that. But my question was about a seasoned deck, and the top of the boards are still in good shape, but they're a little worn. So I was wondering about flipping the boards over and just putting them, you know, back in place with new screws. Given the price of lumber, et cetera, think about that.
Yeah. Something to think about, I guess. Chad, let's go to you first and then to
Tim. Well, so it certainly is possible that flipping the boards would be a way to, get more life out of the decking that you have. I will say that typically when you install decking, a knowledgeable installer is going to look at those deck boards, and there really is, based on the grain, an appropriate top and bottom, because you don't want the deck board to cup and hold moisture on the top. So if it does cup, you want it to basically to push up in the middle so that it is shedding the water. So if you have some boards now that are cupped and holding water, you know, flipping those boards over is definitely potentially a great thing to do. And then it's just a matter of what does it look like on the other side, and whether or not that, you're going to be happy with that. But so that's definitely, I guess, the advice I would give on that. Be selective about which boards you flip over. But I see no reason not to try that.
Yeah. Tim, you agree?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with Chad. And when we're putting down deck boards, the wood deck boards, we look at the ends of every one of them to make sure that the grain is pointing, is curved in the right direction. So as the half moon and the center of the board is facing up, allowing the water to run off. And with the price of lumber today, if he can utilize the boards, by all means, do that. And if I can add one little thing, if he turns them over and they are cupped up where they're holding water in the middle, take a plane and just plane it down on the edges and a sander, and that will that's a big help. It doesn't resolve the issue completely, but it is a big help.
Hmm. There you go. Some good advice, Steve. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Max in Blanchardville, we'll give you a shot now. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi there. I just wanted to call in. My mom has an old farmhouse. She had some work done on the outside. The siding was redone. She's got a mudroom that used to be chilly, but now when you go back there, the floor is absolutely frigid, and it was actually below freezing this past winter when it's never done that before. So I'm wondering if the Tyvek wasn't put on or what would cause that, I guess, would be my question.
Hmm. Chad, any ideas?
Hmm. Yeah. So I'm wondering if possibly when the siding was redone, if there was some sort of old vent that was uncovered, and then they ventilated the crawl space that maybe hadn't been ventilated before, or something like that had changed. It sounds like something has changed. Describe for me how you get under the floor that's so cold. Is it accessible from the basement, or is it outside? Where is it?
it's kind of interesting because there's an old root cellar that's part of the house has like three different parts. One part was like 1890s, and then there's another part that's like early 1900s, and then a third part that's later 1900s. But so you go to the root cellar essentially, and then from there you can access parts of the floor via two different crawl spaces that come off the root cellar.
Okay. Well, so, of course, without seeing it, it's hard to know, but I guess the general advice is that in a situation like that where you have a crawl space, the best way to ensure comfortable floors above would be typically to insulate the foundation walls in the crawl space, the exterior walls, and then up into the sill plate where the framing sits on top of those walls. And typically that's done with a two-part closed cell foam that is sprayed onto those walls, but there are some other materials that can be used as well effectively. It's just much more labor-intensive to do it right. But if you insulate the foundation underneath and that crawl space is all semi-conditioned under the house, connected to the basement and whatnot, then that will help to raise the temperature of the floor. Now, if parts of the floor extend beyond that crawl space, that's more challenging. Then you're going to have to get to that floor and do the insulating under the floor itself. So sometimes it can be quite tricky in an older home that's, you know, where different things have been altered and sometimes maybe, you know, cobbled together in some manner. It can be very complicated, but generally we're trying to keep the space underneath our primary floor semi-conditioned and properly insulated, and that heat will help to raise the ambient temperature of the floor.
Max, thank you very much.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Pogo in Dubuque, Iowa. Your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how you doing, Larry? Good show. I owned a deck and Victorian porch restoration building business for a little over 20 years here now. And so I've got a lot of experience, especially around the Dubuque area that's hilly. So we get a lot of really tall decks, and we get older buildings too. I was just on my way to the store, so I had to kind of jump in here quick to tell you. But these guys both have sound like they got great heads on their shoulders, and they were giving some good advice. They need to talk about attaching decks and porches to stone and brick veneers on houses. I fix all kinds of nightmares where contractors will just go in and attach to stone or brick veneers, which are not permanently attached to the house. So I have a few ways I take care of that with short pieces of I-beam and longer anchors that get into the ribbon joists. And they really should touch base on that, because especially with do-it-yourselfers, they're just going to think if they have that attached to the house, well, it's going to be adequate.
Thanks a lot for calling. Tim, we'll go right to you. Comment.
Yes, he brings up a good point, and something... first of all, it's against the building code to attach a deck ledger board to a veneer, and there are fasteners to attach it to the inside wall. And to be honest, Larry, I think it might be a little bit over the head of a do-it-yourselfer. You have to know what you're doing. You have to be knowledgeable with the building codes. You have to know the materials. And you have to know the attachments. It's a whole show on its own just to get into.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Well, here's something I may relate. Kathleen in Minneapolis, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi there. So I have a 100-plus-year-old brick house, and the person that I bought it from took out one of the walls and put a beam in there and extended the kitchen out about, it's about a 5-foot by 10-foot space. And it is about 5 years ago, it started to pull away from the house. It doesn't have a foundation under it, and it doesn't have a crawl space, so I don't really know what's under there. But is there anything I can do to elevate it so that it's not pulling away from the house anymore?
Chad?
Yeah, so of course it's hard to know without looking at it exactly, but I'm going to guess that a possible solution will be to drive some pylons down near the edge of this addition to essentially provide new footings where they do not currently exist. And it's going to be very important for a contractor to assess what actually was done so that, you know, they're prepared to work around that. And I'll also say that sometimes everything can be done properly. And just because the soil conditions were not adequately assessed, or just because, you know, sometimes things happen, that new foundation might actually be a foundation there that was settling. Again, because of improper preparation or just bad luck. But it is possible to retrofit some footings that are essentially driven into the soil right next to the existing structure. And then that can be properly attached to what you have. And those will stabilize and you can potentially do a little bit of correction and trying to move the structure back to where it should be. But again, that has to be done very carefully by a professional that is assessing what exactly is going on. But it is something that can be addressed.
Yes, my recollection is from a past show that you don't just jack the house back right back up to where to, that portion. It takes a certain amount of time, and it's a slower process than you might imagine, Chad.
That's correct. That is correct. You do it very slowly because when you move one thing, other things can happen, and different stresses will be created, and you can actually create more problems by trying to level a structure if it's not done with a lot of care. But definitely you want to be able to stabilize what you have and hopefully then correct it. So good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck, Kathleen. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in too, by the way. We've zeroed in on deck and outdoor renovations. We're taking some others as well. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Vivian in Green Bay, we'll go to you now. Hi, Vivian.
I have a question regarding backfill, but I have a comment about deck. I recently, just a year and a half ago, I refinished my cedar deck, about 8 by 16 feet. Hadn't been touched in 12 years. And according to your fellows, I did everything right. I sought some advice from the paint people, and I'm very pleased with it. But as I got through it, this took me a really, really long time because I sanded everything, 48 spindles. I now call it my 8.5 month pregnant project. Because you choose to do it, it takes so long, and you look at it, you think, how do I get out of this? But you don't. You just have to keep doing it. So that's my project. But recently we had storm pipes overflow. And at my niece's home, there's a washout of the backfill on the outside of her home. It's about 2x2. And unfortunately, I know we should have professionals look at it, but there's no money to do that. So if we were to do it ourselves, I know we need some gravel, some sand, and we need to change the grade. But do you do these things in layers? How should we deal with this with no budget?
Well,
wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a tough place to be, because, I mean, obviously the materials alone are going to be costly, and oftentimes it's much less expensive ultimately if you're having to hire the labor anyway, you know, to use some equipment to move around the materials that need to be properly installed. But yeah, so I'm not sure what to recommend on that.
Yeah, Tim, anything from on your end?
I think the only thing I would recommend there is if they know some people that are in the trades that'll come over on weekends to just kind of coach them where they can do it themselves and maybe help out a little bit. That's about the only thing I could think of there.
Yeah, it's and I don't think you can go online. You know, I don't know, maybe there's something online where you could find some video about it, but I think in this case, you might want to take Tim's advice, Vivian, and Chad's advice, and save some money, although I know it's something that probably has to be done right away or very quickly. This is a problem probably with our climate change that we're going to maybe see some more of, Chad.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's, and I mean, I guess, you know, if there's a silver lining to housing prices, you know, being high right now, you know, if there's any way to possibly leverage, if you have any equity in the property at all, that would help you be able to address this problem, you know, because a home is such a important asset for many of us, and, you know, maintaining it and dealing with problems like this, it's really important, because, you know, once certain things start to go, then you know, that asset itself loses considerable value. So
yeah, I hadn't thought of that, a home equity loan.
Yeah, maybe that might help.
Yeah,
or can I add something there that Chad just reminded me of?
Sure.
I would check the area, the village or the city where your house is, and check with your municipality and see if there's financing incentives like grants, TIF programs that will actually give you the money to fix up the house, to fix up the property, especially if it's in danger of becoming dilapidated.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good suggestion. Good luck. Thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Tim Quigley of Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison, Tim Quigley, owner of Quigley Design, Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail. Great to have them along. Questions for them. We've zeroed in a bit on decks and outdoor renovations, but we've taken a few other questions as well. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's turn to Dean in Mount Horeb next. Hi, Dean.
Yes, just a comment to the gentleman who called in about flipping over deck boards.
Yeah.
I did that. I have some cedar decking under a covered porch, and some of the boards were kind of cracking and you know, a little bit of water damage on them. So some of them I did flip over, and it was pretty successful. The only thing you have to think about is that there will be marks where the joists are, and so what I did there was some of them I was able just to, and it might be the fact that it was, you know, the cedar reacting with the wood, you know, the joist wood, but there were some marks on there, and I threw a little bit of light sanding, and then with a power washer, they pretty much disappeared. But that's just one thing that a gentleman will probably have to think about if you flipped them over. But other than that, I mean, it was good. It's almost like new boards on the other side.
Mm. Dean, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. So there's some hope for our earlier caller who wanted to flip his deck boards. Gus and De Pere, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. I've got a porch on the back of the house that is concrete, but it had vinyl siding on the outside of it. And in order to do that, there are like 2x4s or 2x2s embedded in the concrete and every 16 inches apart, and that's what they nailed the vinyl to. So I want to put a stucco over that, and I'm wondering, do I need to screw on expanded metal to parse over that before I just do the stucco, or can I go right over the wood and the concrete?
Well, so I would say that I'm intrigued by this structure and would want to see it really before trying to give definitive advice, because it sounds a little unusual, but if it is in fact a cement wall and the furring strips were only there to hold this other material, is the wall just a like a half wall that encloses the porch?
So it's, you know, it's about 2 feet high, and they probably, you know, did like a poured footed foundation, filled it in with concrete and put concrete, or excuse me, probably filled it in with dirt or gravel fill, whatever, and then poured the top over that. But and then, like I said, these the board, the wood is not on the concrete, it's embedded into it.
Yeah. Right.
It's like level with the concrete on the outside.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, my concern with anything like this is that you know, we always have to be thinking about moisture. We want to keep water out of it. And we want to allow any moisture that gets in to have a way to get out. You know, the reason I hesitate is that I'm concerned that those furring strips are going to eventually rot away. And if you rely on them to attach this new surface, it may fail. So I guess I'm going to have to take a pass, because there are too many things that could go wrong here. It sounds like, you know, an interesting, structure and project. And I do, it should be possible, to put some sort of a stucco veneer, onto that, provided some basic, fundamentals are taken care of.
Yeah.
So I wish I could give you more information, but.
There you go. Gus, thank you for calling. Jane in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi there. My question is regarding a new build for a deck that might be around 12 by 12 feet. Could you give me advice as far as the best material, either for a deck or maybe a patio, stamped concrete or paving stones? In regards to both the cost and the durability of this? Thanks.
Tim, you want to take that?
Sure. With the deck, I won't be able to comment so much on the concrete, but with the deck, are you going to do this yourself or have a contractor come in and do it?
Have a contractor.
Okay.
Okay. The best type of a deck, of course, is steel framing for the deck itself. But if you're going to be living in the house for, say, just 5 years, that might be a little bit overkill. If you're planning on living there for a lot longer, then it would be a good investment. And other than that, then there's the treated lumber for the structure. The composite, you know, I'm partial towards the composite because, of, you know, you've heard probably a lot of the comments with people struggling with sanding and restaining wood. And if you get a good reputable contractor as well, they will be able to advise you on the right path. It's hard to give the proper advice without seeing the project, without being there.
Yeah, I remember I took my deck off and put in a stone patio for a variety of reasons. But Chad, any comment on that?
Well, I was just going to add, because I agree with everything Tim said, and I think to address part of what the caller was asking is, you know, you have to think about the cost of ownership. It's not just the cost of building the deck, but it's the cost of then having to maintain it based on the materials that you've used. So to that end, you know, when some of our callers have talked about, you know, needing to refinish their deck every year or two, you know, obviously there's cost involved. Even if you're doing it yourself, you're buying the materials and you're spending the time, and you have to do it to maintain the structure. You know, so there's a certain amount of maintenance that's kind of baked in depending on how it's done. So I would encourage you to talk to the contractors that you are interviewing about that issue. They can probably speak to, you know, how often it's likely to need refinishing and what that cost. And then, as Tim said, depending on how long you're going to live there, you know, I would factor in, you know, what's this deck going to cost me for the first 10 years of ownership? And then you might decide that spending a little more on some of these composite features might make sense.
Yeah, for sure. Jane, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill in Oregon, we'll go to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. We're kind of stuck dealing with a creative solution to a setback problem where we're going to have about an 18-inch high wood deck that's going to abut against landscaping material or masonry. What needs to go between? What do I need to put between the deck and the landscaping material to protect the wooden, the framework of the deck itself along the side?
Hmm. Tim, what do you think?
Okay, so are you going to have is the framework going to be up against the landscaping, like ground contact?
Well, that's kind of, well, right now nothing's built yet, and it's going to be done by two different contractors. They won't be interacting because the landscaping side can't start until the deck is already completed. And I mean, I have the freedom to make it whatever I want, but it's just, I don't know what the best path to follow is. Because what I need is a continuous surface essentially, but I don't want, you know, but I realize that they can't, you know, if the wood's abutting against the landscaping material, it will rot. And I'm trying to figure out, do I need a vapor barrier between there, or is there any other, or what would you recommend as something that could, or how would you go about doing that, I guess, you know, conceptually?
Okay. So when you say the wood abutting against the landscaping, is this the structure, the treated lumber, or is it like cedar surface on the deck?
We're trying to make it a continuous surface, you know, so you can walk straight from the decking on into the landscaping material. And so there will definitely be contact in some aspect, at least with the surface material, which will be a high plastic composite. My real concern is with the framework beneath that and making sure that just isn't constantly getting water pushed at it from the landscaping material. And just
okay.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, I understand that a lot better now. I would make sure and get the framing material, the structure. Make sure you get the lumber for that is rated for ground contact. Any saw cuts that are done on site, I would make sure your contractor puts a sealer on that. And then with the decking boards that's in contact with the landscaping, you can go with a PVC decking board or a mineral-based composite. If I could mention a couple of brands, Larry, you know, AZEK is a PVC composite deck board. Decorators is a mineral-based composite. Both of them are rated for ground contact. And if you want to be extra cautious with the ground contact rated lumber, just put a sealer on the whole board, and you should be good.
There you go, Bill. Thank you so much for calling. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Tim Quigley of Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail, our guest today. They'll be with us up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guests. And you can call in 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Taking a look at home improvement topics on the show today, looking closely at outdoor living projects with our guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Tim Quigley, owner of Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail. So questions for our experts, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Bill in Oregon emailed that it sounds like power washing is counterproductive when prepping a deck for a new coat of stain. And what deck cleaning method would you recommend to minimize water absorption? And Tim, I think you mentioned mild a walk behind sander, but go ahead.
Definitely a walk behind sander. And then get into the tough spots with hand sandpaper or sanding block. The power washer, if he wants to let it sit for a couple of days, it would be okay. But then while the sun is shining on it, that wood that he just cleaned off is instantly oxidizing, which takes a little the oxidizing the surface of it, which prevents the stain from penetrating properly. So I would definitely go with the sander. It is a little more work, but you don't have to do it as often.
Mm-hmm. Marie in Waukesha called to say that Vivian, who called earlier, may want to contact local scouting groups or high school tech classes to help with labor on that fill problem that we talked about. And that's, I think that's a good piece of advice as well. A listener emailed to ask if there are protections for homeowners if contractors don't build to code.
Good question, Larry. And Chad can kind of help me on this, too. The state of Wisconsin, I think that they recommend that when a homeowner is having a project done on their house that requires a permit, to have the contractor take out the permit. Because if the homeowner signs off on the permit and the builder doesn't finish the project, the homeowner is liable to get it repaired. So just make sure your contractor is licensed and that they can take out permits. If Chad wants to add to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good advice, Tim. It is true that the contractor should typically pull the permit. And when there's a code violation, and particularly if a contractor is found to have knowingly tried to cover up a code violation, I mean, that's a serious offense, and it can impact not just your license status, but there are potential civil penalties for such behavior. So the codes are there to protect the homeowner and to have structures be structurally sound and reasonably safe. And, you know, I'm sure Tim and I you know, would probably agree that sometimes the codes don't go far enough or don't address certain things that probably should be addressed. By and large, the codes are there to make sure that, you know, the consumer is protected. So
there we go. Lee and Madison, we'll give you a chance to join in now. Hi, Lee.
Hi. We recently bought a new house, and the deck is pretty large, probably 20 by 15, but it's been stained or painted red. And we're looking for the best way to remove or cover that and get a more natural color.
Hmm. So how do we get rid of what's on there? I guess you need to know, is it a stain or is it a paint? Do you know?
I really don't know for sure. It's semi-opaque.
Okay.
Okay. Semi-opaque. So it's probably, it sounds like it might be a stain with a pretty heavy pigment on it. What kind of condition are the decking boards in? Are they, were you thinking of removing them as well?
Or just,
they're
reasonably good, yeah.
They're good.
Okay. So again, you know, the advice I gave to a couple of other callers, the sander, sand it down. And are you planning on doing this yourself or having a painting contractor come in and do it?
We'd probably do it ourselves.
Okay. You can get these, you can get the walk-behind sanders at most rental places in around Madison, and contractor rental supplies, and then once you, they're a little getting used to both. Then once you figure it out, after 5 minutes, you can walk up and down the deck with that thing, you know, like a cakewalk.
All right, there you go, Lee. Good luck. Appreciate your call.
And also, can I add one thing, Larry?
Sure.
Sorry. Just make sure talk to your paint supply. Your paint supply store, you know, the there's a paint supply company that I go to in McFarland, Premier Paints. It's a father and son operation, and they are just very, very knowledgeable on the different stains and paints and that.
Okay. Thank you again. Appreciate it. Judy in Waukesha, your turn now. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I was just wondering, I have to replace the boards on my deck because the other ones are rotting. And I was just wondering if the new decking that's out there, the vinyl, gets too hot. Because I have dogs on it all the time and, you know, someone said that it gets so hot for their feet.
Yeah, what do you think, Tim?
The darker the color, the hotter it will get. Is it in a shaded area? Is it facing south, west, or north?
It's facing south, and it's in full sun.
Okay, so that will get quite hot. If you go with a lighter color, the products that seem to best hold up or more tolerable to walk on is the AZAC and the Decorator's product. Also, have you thought of maybe building a shade overhead, like a pergola or some kind of shade structure, which does help a lot, too?
Oh, that is what I'm thinking I might do. But at this point, I just have like a partial pergola that I hang plants from. It really doesn't do anything for shade.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be worth thinking about. And then going with a lighter color material from the sound of it. Judy, good luck. Appreciate it. Aaron in La Crosse, your turn.
Thank you for taking my call. I had last Saturday when we had that big, not a big rain, but we had some rain. I came home and found a big puddle inside my garage. The floor drain, the water was coming up through the floor drain. I have the floor drain, and then I also have my eaves coming off of the garage and part of the house that come down and into the ground, and they team up there and then go out further. I got it loose by running a hose and running water, and there was seemed to be an ice dam in there. So I'm wondering how to prevent that from icing up in the future.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So if this is a persistent problem, you may end up having to install some sort of a heat tape to keep the water flowing in the areas that are problematic. You know, and a heat tape is just a wire filament that's electrified that's going to essentially melt the ice or prevent the ice dam from occurring. There may be some other design changes that could be made to help alleviate the problem. And certainly heat tape is generally the thing that we consider a last resort, but sometimes it's necessary to keep the water flowing and to you know, not have to resort to using salts and things like that that, you know, create other problems. So
worth a look, Aaron. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Bob in Dakota, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love the program.
Thank you.
Say, I'm thinking about changing my wood railing on my deck this summer to the cable system, and I'm curious if I should be using a green treat post or a steel post, and also how do I get around a 90-degree corner with the cable?
Okay. Tim, I imagine you've had to deal with that.
Yeah, some good questions. If you go with a steel post, its exterior, make sure it is stainless steel. Because the regular steel post will rust, and you'd be surprised how quick it starts to rust because the cable going through the post eats away at the powder coating. With the get around the corner, put a post on each on each side of the corner, like a right angle. And if you're going with the treated post on the tensioning end of the railing, make sure you go with a 4x6 or a 6x6 post, because you do need some pretty good tension on that cable to you know, to comply with the building code.
Yeah, good advice.
And I just want to add to that. I have seen, and I'm sure Tim has seen this too, some really bad distortion and warping in wood post caused by the tensioning of the cable railing, you know, where maybe a do-it-yourselfer came in, and to get the proper tension, you know, they ended up distorting that wood post, literally, you know, pulling it in. And so that, you know, Tim's comment about using you know, larger size post material is one that is born out of experience, I'm sure, of seeing that sort of a product failure. Yeah. So,
or the stainless steel, you're not going to have that problem?
Correct.
And also with the stainless steel post, with the if you go with a 4x6 post on the corners to withstand the tension, it defeats the purpose of the cable railing, whereas with the stainless steel post is 1.5 inches square, and it gives it a much more open look.
Yeah, yeah. There you go, Bob. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Christina in Glenwood City, your turn.
Hi there. Thank you. My sister has a large weathered wraparound porch that is structurally sound. She would prefer that it be white. What advice do you have to redo the porch with the least amount of long-term maintenance, such as paint, stain, or maybe even a vinyl cover?
Okay. Tim, what do you think?
Is the porch flooring, is that a solid floor, like tongue and groove Douglas fir, or can you see down between the boards? Is there deck boards on there?
It seems you cannot see through it.
Okay. So most likely it's tongue and groove Douglas fir then. And it's covered, right?
Yes, that's right. It's a 100-year-old home.
Okay. That's pretty good, because a lot of the damage caused to exterior wood is from sunshine. I'm drawing a blank right now, but the heat of the sun on it. So again, sand it down. Make sure you get it down to the bare wood, and talk to a local paint supplier on good quality paint or stain for you.
There you go. Christina, good luck. Thank you. On to Kurt in Sparta next. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question. I'm going to be pouring a concrete driveway, and rather than the traditional half-inch steel rebar, one of the local builders, they offer fiberglass now at the home center. And then there's also a volcanic rock, a substitute basalt, I believe it's called. Do your guests have any thoughts or comments about one being better than the other? And cost is not a consideration.
Okay. Chad, what do you think?
I'm going to have to plead lack of knowledge on that. I have a couple of concrete specialists that I lean on pretty heavily when we have issues like this. And I will say that, you know, fiberglass reinforcement can be an excellent substitute for the traditional rebar, but I'm not familiar with the question about the volcanic rock.
Yeah, that's something I haven't heard much about either. I can't remember hearing about it on the show before. So,
yeah.
Sorry we can't help you out there, Kurt, but I appreciate your call anyway. It reminds me, you know, thinking about different materials and stuff, reminded me about supply chains. And we've talked about this in the past, about supply chains being significantly affected by the pandemic. Is any of this clearing up now? And maybe, on, let's say, even for deck materials?
You know, that's a great question, Larry. And I, every product is different. And we assume right now that things are going to be hard to get. And I guess the good thing about being really busy and being scheduled out, you know, 9 months to a year and a half or whatever it is right now, that, you know, hopefully we have time to get the things we're going to need when we go to build them. But it is very difficult to know. And part of it is driven by the disruptions of the pandemic. But then there's also just a tremendous demand right now for a lot of materials, because people have been trapped in their homes for 2 years and they're ready to, you know, do those projects that they've been thinking about. And so I would say demand is the bigger problem right now, that even though we're resolving some of the supply issues, the demand is still overwhelming what would be a normal supply of certain materials.
And Tim, I think you mentioned earlier, you're out until July, are you not?
Correct. Yeah. And so what I'm telling people is order the materials right now. We're ordering the materials and we're holding on to them until we're ready to go. So far we haven't had too much issues, I think, in the deck board manufacturers, because they just have maybe four or five products online. They're able to do some corrections here and there. Now, we did have an issue with one supplier last year where they took one color off the line for 6 months. And but, you know, fortunately for us, we were aware of that. And we would let our customers know if you want this, if this is the one you want, be prepared to wait 6 months for it.
Hmm. I'm wondering about paints. You know, like I'm sitting here thinking about getting my house painted again. It's been 10 years. Is paint a part of the problem, or is it readily available?
There again, it depends on the material. I know that paints used to seal and protect exterior cement surfaces, a lot of them are manufactured down in the Gulf Coast region of the country. And there was a major storm last fall that took out a facility down there, and the storm caused the shortage of that particular type of paint. It had caused some disruptions on some of our projects. And that, of course, had nothing to do with the pandemic or anything else. That's what I would say is more of a typical, but unusual yet. I mean, typical, but still, you never know when it's going to happen. Delay in the process. So it's a great question.
But if you're thinking about getting something done to your home, I would. It sounds to me like you should be talking to your, you know, getting some estimates or talking to people right now if you want to get something done in the next year.
Absolutely, Larry. I mean, I think it's always been the case that, you know, quality installers and contractors and materials are always something that you have to plan for. They can be in short supply. And typically, we used to be 3 to 4 months out in our planning and design services, and then typically 3 to 4 months out in our construction after going to contract. And we've seen those timelines double, if not triple, such that when someone reaches out to us now, we say, we hope that we'll be able to do this project in 2023 if all goes well. But the odds are that some projects will not start until 2024. So,
well, it's a way. On that note, I want to thank you both for being with us today. It was a lot of fun. I learned a bunch, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. Chad, Tim, thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry. Thank it's you. Always great.
Chad great, Spade great of Chad's Design Build and Tim Quigley of Quigley Decks and Quigley Cable Rail, our guest today. And just by way of full disclosure, we should mention Chad's Design Build is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. So that's pretty cool, too. Garden Talk coming up tomorrow. We'll talk about seed-linked program and how it works and answer your vegetable gardening questions. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.